I'm sure many of us can think back to our childhoods and remember perhaps the time when we either announced we were leaving home or maybe even carried it out, even if it only meant disappearing for an afternoon, having taken enough to eat maybe for a couple of hours. But of course, there are still many tragic cases today, each year, when young people do actually leave home and disappear, leaving behind often baffled and traumatized parents, desperately hoping that their child will get back in touch. More than 200,000 incidents of missing people are recorded each year in this country, two-thirds of whom are under 19. The departure of the prodigal son doesn't quite fall into the category of the runaway teenager who disappears without telling anyone. In this case, he's perfectly upfront. He wants to go, and he wants some money, and he wants to have some fun. When you stop to think about the story, the behavior in particular of the younger son and the father is really quite extraordinary. In fact, maybe in some ways the only person who actually behaves normally in our eyes may well be the elder brother. The younger son, in a sense, presupposes the death of his father. He demands his estate before his dad has even died. And his attitude is, in a sense, I can't be bothered waiting until you're gone, old man. I want what I'm due right now. And it's the fact that the father simply hands over the son's inheritance without asking any questions that leaves us perhaps somewhat baffled. Why did he do that? Was it some sort of test? Did he know that things would go wrong for his son, but he wanted him to learn for himself, all part of growing up? We, of course, are not told. In the manner in which the younger son goes off to spend his money, he must have known that he was burning his boats, but he doesn't care. He enjoys himself to the full. And researchers have discovered that there was, in fact, a way in which the community who were scornful of somebody doing this would have shown their disfavor. And apparently it was known as the Kazaza ceremony. Any Jew who loses his money among foreigners will face the ceremony. It literally means the cutting off. The kazaza would be performed by breaking a clay pot at the feet of the prodigal as a visual symbol that the community was rejecting the person because of their behavior. Well, the son doesn't care what the community may think about him. He sets off to the far country to spend his inheritance. And he brings further disgrace on his family because he's living among Gentiles, among non-Jews. And of course, famously, he runs out of money, he becomes poor, his friends are only there for the money, and they desert him, and he ends up in the pig farm, coming to his senses eventually. And then there's the other big surprise of the story, the fact that the father welcomes him back. Again, his actions would be seen as scandalous in the eyes of the community. Going out to greet his son, to forgive his son, to have a banquet in celebration of his return was not what the father was expected to do. He should have rejected his son. He should have shown his disfavor, but he chooses not to do so. And as we know, the son has rehearsed the words that he's going to say to his dad, and he can barely get them out because his father stops him and he welcomes him home in the most touching and beautiful way. But then the elder son, the one who had been loyal to his dad, of course, he is furious when he finds out what's going on. And the father says, "Son, you are always with me. All that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this son of yours was dead and now he has come to life. He was lost and now he has been found." Echoes for some there of the dying and the rising again of Jesus himself. When it comes to parables, it's often said that there should only really be one key message in any particular parable. But it's hard not to find a number of different meanings and messages in this wonderful story. And so I'd like to think about some aspects of the story today and how we might apply it to our society and our church today. Take the onlookers, for example, the community, who've heard the stories about this wayward son and who hear about the celebrations on his return and are none too impressed. Maybe in some ways they are like those who look upon Christianity today and are none too impressed or are somewhat baffled as to what we are all about. Maybe they're like the people who, in the same sense that they cannot understand the behavior of the son or indeed the father, they cannot fully understand what Christianity is for, why it exists in our society today. They are simply onlookers, watching in amazement or bemusement at this activity that we call religion. There's a lack of logic in the father's actions. They don't really make sense in the eyes of the world. And sometimes faith is like that. Sometimes faith lacks logic. Sometimes what we do, what we believe in, does not make sense to the outside world. But in so many ways, our faith transcends logic. It doesn't always make sense. And in so many ways, I think that's wherein lies the wonder of our faith. And then there's the younger son, not content with what he had, wanting to live life in the fast lane. The prospect of working for his dad for years to come held no appeal for him. And he suffers a trait which many people experience today, an inability to be content with what we have. Many people seem to have it all, and yet still they want the bigger house or the fancier car, or they want to move up the career ladder even more, or they decide that they're bored with their husband or wife and they go off with someone younger. And this sense of being discontent can gnaw away at people and ruin their lives. And it happened in the case of the younger son. But he was to find that his friends were only interested in him because he had money. He was to find that while the good life was great for a short time, it did not last forever. Perhaps he realized that his experiences were shallow and fleeting and did not bring fulfillment. And only on returning to his dad, only on coming to his senses in that pig farm, did he realize what he truly had before: the love of his dad, the security of a loving home. Again, it's a simple lesson, but it's a lesson for all of us, that we can so easily take for granted what we have in our lives, that we fail to appreciate what we have until we lose it. The experiences of the younger son say quite simply, be thankful for what we have. There's the journey that the younger son took, and for many people, faith and belief and doubts can be like the journey of the prodigal. In what's now in decreasing numbers, children grow up in a faith community today. They're nurtured in the church, but then the vast majority will move away from the church, they'll give it up. They may still hold on to a faith of some kind, and they may still come back to the church, perhaps when they have children of their own. Or again, in many cases, they will lose faith altogether and they won't come back. Like the prodigal rejecting the father and his home, they perhaps reject God, or more likely simply become indifferent towards God and towards faith. That's what was worrying Paul in the passage we heard today from Galatians. People who had only recently come to faith were already turning away and returning to the old gods or the false gospels. They were becoming lost. And Paul has some very strong words to say about their behavior. And so in some cases, there might be those who are like the lost son who return to faith, who realize perhaps that they do need something deeper and more meaningful and purposeful in their lives. And the story makes clear that, like the father in the son, the church must be open to those who are returning to faith, or indeed to those who are coming here for the first time. Many people are asking questions. Many people want to explore faith. Many people want to find something deeper in their lives. And I know that recently you've completed an Alpha course, which I think is one of the excellent ways of attracting people who simply want to search and ask questions and learn more about this thing that we call Christianity. The reasons that people reject Christianity or never come to faith are complex. In the case of the son, he wanted to experience adventure. He wanted to experience the secular life, if you like. And for many people today, especially perhaps young people, that life is much more attractive than faith and being part of the church. We need to show that faith, that the church is exciting, that it's relevant, that it's meaningful for people today. For others, they lose faith because it no longer makes sense. They look at the complex, random nature of life and they cannot equate it with a God who is supposed to provide security and meaning and love. For others, human suffering destroys faith, the death of a loved one, the illness, the accident, human cruelty. It becomes impossible for them to continue to believe in a loving God in the face of anguish and despair and pain. Again, the church must be like the father in the story, welcoming people into our midst who want to explore such questions and who want to say, we're angry, who want to say, why? Who want to express their frustrations and their fears. If we can create a space where that can happen for people today, then we are serving our community and we are truly being the church. And then there's the elder brother. Having lived a life of service to his dad, having been faithful and true, no wonder he's upset when his brother, who's wasted his father's money, comes home to celebrations and to a sense of rejoicing. What we see in the elder brother is something that we perhaps see in ourselves. Not just the jealousy and the anger, but maybe buried within that jealousy and anger. There is a sense of vulnerability and a sense of hurt. He's saying, why don't you love me after all I've done for you, Dad? Why do you never tell me how much I mean to you? Do I have to run off and waste all your money before you appreciate me? And here there's the simple fact that we all need to be loved, that we need affirmation, that we need to be told that our lives actually matter. And again, I believe that one of the hallmarks of Christianity and of the church must be to affirm people, to show them that their lives matter and that their lives are as equally important as every other life. What a difference it makes if we compliment people from time to time, if we recognize their qualities, if we give them a sense of self-worth. Because there are people who don't like themselves, who have low self-esteem, who believe even that their lives are worthless. The church and Christ says to them, your lives matter. Affirmation must be a hallmark of our Christian community. And so we come to the Father himself. And here Jesus is clearly saying that this is what God is like. A God of love. A God who forgives us. His love is overwhelming. It's constant. God is the Father who is always there to welcome us home. Always there to reassure us when we recognize where we've gone wrong, to offer his forgiving love. God's love also in many ways defies logic, just as for some it defied logic that the Father should welcome his Son home. Sometimes we do not understand the ways of God. God is mystery. God is awesome in his ways. But ultimately, God is love. It's a wonderful parable. It's a wonderful story. Maybe you see something of yourself in that story, in the characters within it. What's it saying to you? What's it saying to you in your life today? What's it saying to this church community? What's it saying to the wider church in this week of prayer for Christian unity? Ultimately, I hope it's saying something very simple and profound that we need to tell the world about, and that is that God is love.